Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Dope Black Podcast.
This is the Dope Black Dad Podcast. My name is Marvin Harrison. Oh my gosh, today I haven't done a podcast in a very long time. Just so, I don't think my guest even knows this, but I was partially retired from the podcast world. Not for any real reason, but just like we've been doing the podcast for 4 years now, almost five actually, and I was just like, I really want to hear what other people have to say. I was kind of tired of my own voice, and then all these amazing men came out with their stories. And I was just like, I think I'll keep it this way. So we've kind of left the podcast to other men for the last 2 years. And it's great. I kind of pop up every now and again when there's something very specific I want to say. But then when I saw you out and you said you had a human being that you have created, I was like, oh, no, I'm coming back. Give me a second. Give me a mic. Give me an hour in my diary. And here we are. For anyone who doesn't know, we're speaking to Armani Simpson. How are you, man?
I'm very, very good. I'm blessed. And yeah, man, it's an honor, bro. You know your family. So, you know what I mean? It's good to chat on this platform, man.
It's super exciting because this is such a weird thing to say to somebody because it's slightly narcissistic. But because we're friends, we can do it, yeah? Is that when you meet a version of yourself out in the world, yeah? I just want to keep you close, brother. It's that simple. Like, and it's weird because the ingredients are just like a clean-hearted man, yeah, trying his best at the things that he's doing. That for me, you can get me on those two things alone, yeah? But then you're highly talented and you've actually created a short film, which we'll talk about in a second. It's not even the first project you've done. But also, it's like every time I hear about you, people talk to you about about you with such passion. Like you don't create indifference in people. And so I feel like you have this gravitas, which I don't know where it comes from, but I know where mine comes from. I've had to go search for that over 8 years and I found my answers. Like, but for someone who people constantly engage with, but leave in slight awe and slight like, oh, that guy, are you present to that in your, and what the impact you have on people?
Do you know what? It's amazing to hear that, man. Do you know what? It's, how would I put it? Like, as a believer, as you know, right, obviously I'm trying to live my life as pure as possible, loving people, walking through life with love and intention. And so I'm glad to hear that that's rubbing off and that it's not coming across as contrived or like I've got some kind of ulterior motive, because really that's just who I am, man. You know, I'm just trying to represent. And yeah, no, it's amazing to hear that, man. Appreciate you.
Thank you. That's dope, man. Do you know what's funny is that good people don't know that they're good people, really. I think there's a part of them that has a gap, and so they work hard at being a present to their impact in the world. And I feel like it's a really good thing and it's a good skill to develop. And I wish more people had it, to be completely honest. Because now when you ask people to be conscious and aware of like their impact on other people's lives, they start telling you about wokeism and controlling and freedom of speech. I'm like, my guy, listen, did your parents not just instill the basics? It's like being nice and honorable to people. No, that's just like a foundational human interaction. But it's become like a really big deal now for some reason. How do you find navigating the world as a black man in 2023, being this person, eliciting those types of responses? Do you find it challenging at times?
Yeah, I guess you've got to go through and make sure that people don't take you for an idiot. You know what I'm saying? You have to have your eyes very, very open. You know, because obviously I go around and I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I'm very much like, I'm going to trust people, right? And I'm going to engage with people. But I guess, at the same time, you know, I have had a particular life and I have had a particular perspective. And so I do go through with like an awareness. You know, there's a sense of hypervigilance from everything that I've experienced in my life, but also, you know, just just appreciating the fact that there's a lot of people that will want to come around my space and be in my life and stuff. And so you have to kind of move correctly and have like a reference process. I need to do some DBS checks and stuff. And, you know, I'm blessed to have a really vast network where I can message people and say, oh, I just met this person. Like, what do you think about this person? And all of that, as I'm sure, you know, people do when they meet me. So, yeah, I'm just trying to go through life and connect with people, as you said, that share similar passion, similar goals, similar ethics and integrity and stuff. So, yeah, man.
No, I hear you. I want to ask you this question more as a curious from my own person. So this is nothing really to do with the podcast. This is me just want to ask a question. How do you engage in boundaries, though? How have you gone about that? Because obviously you said you're a warm, open person. You invite people in. You want to help. You want to believe the best in people. But how do you go about creating boundaries so that you're not burnt and impacted from just like the light that you create for people?
Do you know what? It's a great question. I think I'm still navigating how to do that, especially with young people, because my heart is young people. My heart is always to serve them and to give them space to speak and to be, you know, to be encouraged and empowered. But now that I have my own young person, my own child, I'm very conscious of not being everyone else's father and not being her father. And so I guess as she grows in age and as I develop as a father, I really want to just be very conscious of the times that I allocate to other people's children, and more so probably setting up spaces where it's not just me being the person doing that encouragement, you know, that I create things that can still have the same effect as if it was me, but there's more people involved in it. I guess also as well, it's having a conversation with my therapist about, you know, some of the stuff that I've dealt with growing up and where I've really wanted to be, I guess, accepted growing up as a child, you know, struggling with my identity as an infant and, you know, really trying to work out where I fit into friendship groups. And so, yeah, I feel like now I'm older, it's being aware that actually, Imani, are you doing this because you just want that person to like you? And you've got that viewpoint of like, yeah, like, oh yeah, I just want to be accepted. I want to be included. Or are you generally just doing it because of the kindness of your heart? So it's having that awareness and just making sure that, you know, I'm conscious of how I move as much as possible and just constantly evaluating each day, man, to be honest.
I hear you. And so obviously you said you've created life. And for me, obviously, that's the pinnacle of my existence so far, because obviously before that, I was, you know, things have happened in my work career that have been amazing. But there is something specific about this mission that has felt bigger than me, almost in a way that's quite spiritual, to create life and to help it navigate the world. How have you experienced the early form? How old is your daughter? It's, she's 6 months, 6 weeks?
16 weeks now.
Wow.
16 weeks, man. Yeah.
How are you navigating the early stages of fatherhood?
Just being as present as I can be. You know, I'm so blessed to have like an amazing wife that we've gone on that journey together through life where we understand each other. And so even though this is a new chapter, there's like a foundation that we've got that's like, it's easy for us to find our place together because we're not new in this thing. Do you know what I mean? Yes, we've got a child. Yes, it's a completely new responsibility and dynamic. But even when we kind of move apart slightly because of, you know, I'm working a lot more than I normally would do or whatever, we just find our way of being able to communicate and explain, oh, actually, I need a bit more help here or whatever, or what's going on with you. We just find our center. So I think for me, like I've been, as I said, I've tried to be as present as possible. We did like our NCT classes, which were really helpful. National Childbirth and Trust, I think they're called, something like that. And that was really empowering for me because, again, like not really having an understanding of fatherhood or what, even just the antenatal process, etc. It was just empowering. And so I went into the process of having baby girl, like just clued up as much as possible and very ready to like, yo, like when she comes, this is what I need to do in delivery. This is what I need to do here, etc. So now she's here, man. I'm just enjoying it as much as I can, you know, as much as I can enjoying it.
And then what has been your process to like accept? Obviously, we all come from being raised somehow from some sort of background. Did you go into it with a clear idea of what you wanted to achieve or experience as a dad? Did you have a mission? Like for me, my dad wasn't present in my life, so I knew that's one thing that I wanted to do is be present, active and loving. Those were the words that came into my head. Did you have a mission beforehand, or are you just taking it as it comes?
Do you know what? I intentionally did therapy before my daughter came, because I wanted to, there was lots of things that I, like, me and my parents have got a great relationship now, but there was a long time that we didn't. And there's a lot of things that I didn't understand about their choices. And so going through therapy and really being able to have honest conversations with myself, and then to pull out the work and, you know, kind of go and speak to my parents about things, that was empowering. So I was able to understand some of their choices as two Black parents that grew up in, you know, that brought up their children in the suburbs and sent me to school in the hood, right? And so it's like they wanted me to have the Black experience, because they knew that going to school in an area that wasn't very diverse, I'd probably struggle. But they didn't realize that putting me in a school that was very diverse, but me being one of the only kind of kids that had a particular perspective and privilege, was also going to be challenging. So I guess it's really just, you know, to answer your original question, man, like I'll go back to what I said before. I'm trying to be as present as I can so that I can keep adapting. I can keep learning from my daughter, keep learning as we go through life, while also trying to look at things that have come before us and making sure that we navigate it and we communicate about stuff as a family. So yeah, that's what I would say is the mission, man. I think my family didn't really talk a lot when we were growing up, because they didn't know how to. It wasn't really about talking about, you know, I'm going to hear where you're coming from. It was very much, this is what we're saying, because of the, you know, the environment that we were in and what we're going through, but trying to change that, man.
So yeah, there's the conception process, and then you found out, then you find out you're having a child. By the way, both of my children were conceived on holiday. Some random fact that one was in New York, one was in Malaga or something bizarre like that. So clearly there's something about getting on a plane that creates human life. But so you found out you're having a child. That 9 month period, what was the experience like of pregnancy? Because as a dad from a newer perspective, I know what my experience was. What was your pregnancy experience like?
Yeah, it was nervous, because I think it's something that you haven't experienced before in that way. And so, you know, you're a little bit like, every time I go for a scan, is everything going to be okay? Every time I you know, just if she's not feeling well, one day, is everything all right? Like, you just, there's a sense of like, this is outside of my control. And so I think, as someone that is still navigating what it's like to give away control and not to be completely in control of all the elements, having something that had nothing to do with me, like, I, as you said, I was part of the conception, but then after that, I'm just the wingman, I'm just the hype man, you know, hope you're right, get sent out to the shop, all of that stuff, and you know what I'm saying?
That's just wingman, you know?
Yeah, trust me, I'm just here, bro, I'm just, you know what I mean? I'm the co-pilot to a certain extent, but I'm not flying the plane. So I'm very much like, yeah, I tried to be the person that was encouraging as much as possible. I tried to be the person that was able to have a slight separation from the process that my wife was going through, in order to, like, you know, I guess, put certain things in place that would give her a bit more of a smoother transition. And even when we went into delivery, you know, we did like hypnobirthing and stuff. So that was my role. Like, literally, when you're having contractions, you know, it's not pain, it's a surge. It's not all of these positive words that kind of, you know, I guess now she says I was the perfect partner for her, because that's what she needed. And so I guess I was just trying to fill in the gaps where I knew, like, you know, so otherwise you're kind of twiddling your thumbs, and I'm not one of those men that's just like, oh, you're pregnant, I'm just going to get on with my life. And, you know, I'm involved. I'm feeling it with her. I want, you know, so yeah, that's how it was for me.
And then for you, I think, can you talk about that moment? Because there is a moment when your partner gives birth and they probably pass out because it's a very intense process. Yeah. And then there's a point where they just hand you the baby and then the health professional just leaves. Did that happen to you?
So we had a water birth.
You actually managed to facilitate that.
Exactly.
I thought that was a con, by the way. I didn't think they things are real, because they always, every time you get there, they're like, it's too far along.
No, you're right. And that's the thing. I think most people we've spoken to, like, when we say, yeah, we had a water birth, people are like, what? Like, you actually did it, kind of thing, you know? And so, yeah, we managed to, like, our process, like, you know, we were blessed, man. Like, I can't lie. We had a, like, for what labor actually is, and, you know, we had a pretty smooth transition into this world for our baby girl. So when you know, even in that process where, you know, the man them are like, nah, brother, don't look, you know, don't look. Yeah, that's it. Game changer. If you look, 100%.
Yeah, same.
First time.
You first can't warn me.
Nah, you can't. Do you know, one of my older cousins was like, hey, bro, listen, don't do it, you know, bro. Don't do it. Like, I wish I hadn't. Like, one of them.
Are you serious?
So, no, he said, he's
gone. Yeah. And then what happened? And then what happened after? You looked and then what happened for you when you saw?
It was joy, bro. Like, it's just like just seeing this face. That was just like, it was, no, don't get me wrong. It's like flipping out. Like, this is like some alien mad thing. But like the magic of the moment surpassed all of the gross feeling. It was just like, rah, that's my child. Like literally seeing her face for the first time. And then like, I always say like she kind of swam out like a tadpole and just, you know, was held up. And then literally just hearing that first cry, I will never forget that moment in my life.
Yeah.
Like that's my child started crying. And then as you said, you know, they kind of handed her to me or I had to cut the umbilical cord. And then, I think you just like, it was just emotions, man. Like it just ran through me where it was just like, she's here, wifey's good. You know, both baby and mom are good. Like there's nothing, they're not concerned. Literally, like it's just, she's here. And then it was just, taking every single moment and like, as I've used the word before, like just being like present and conscious of I'm here. I don't want to look at my phone. Yeah, okay, I was taking pictures here and there, but I was just very conscious of those early moments, looking at her breath, trying to look into her eyes, like whispering affirmations to her, like all of that stuff. So it was so beautiful, man. So beautiful, which I know is a privilege. I know that's a privilege. I know there's a lot of people that I've spoken to that don't have that, and there's stress attached to it, and there's fear and anxiety. But I'm so blessed that my first experience wasn't that.
So we know that there is some sort of waste there. We know that there's a smell of blood. But in a weird way, my level of respect for the mother of my children increased tenfold that day. Like I watched her and I was like, no, you're a gangster, because if that was me, oh no, you'd have to make this whole hospital about me. I need 30 people on deck. I ain't going through this without 30 people around me to support me, drug me, tell me I'm amazing, I'm beautiful, I want compliment, I want affirmation. It was a very intense process to watch. For you now,
but before you answer that question, like it's so funny you say that, because as I said, we were blessed, bro. When we went into the hospital, we got there and it was just literally like, you know, like if I could have written what was a perfect labor process, it was that.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
We had the whole, basically we had the whole ward to ourselves. We had the best, but like we went in a couple of days after and saw some of the other water birthing suites. And we had the best water birthing suite. We had two black midwives, right? Which is like two young black midwives. When baby girl was born, we had the whole midwifery team around my wife. So there was like four or five people. And there was a moment where one of the women kind of came round, that the main head midwife came round and just coached her and just spoke to her in a way that only a young black woman could talk to her and said, listen, look at me, don't do whatever it was that the instruction was. And it was just like, I'm not saying that every time's going to be like that, But I'm telling you now, yeah, if that's what private looks like, I need to get my bread up. Because I need to get my bread up, because if that's what the private healthcare system is, that care, like I can't, like NHS, I appreciate it, but I need that every single time. Every single time, I need that experience. You get me? So
listen, I feel like, because if you go to any other country, you start to really respect the NHS, but then you also understand in the NHS, there are levels to it, and private is, for the big, big things, is a much, much smarter way to go, because the NHS is just stretched. Every time I talk to a doctor, I remember I had like three things I wanted to talk to my doctor about. He only allowed me to talk about one at a time because he didn't have the capacity to go and have all. I was like, bro, what is this, man? Like, he's taking up your time. So like for you now, in terms of your vision of family, what does that actually look like? Because now you're on the court with it. Like, are you going to have 10 human beings running around? Is it going to be a football team? Are you like, I'm done now? Is it like one more, four more? How do you envision like your extension of family?
You know, if we're blessed to have it, man, I'd say three, maybe four. I'd say we don't want a huge, massive family, but we definitely want our baby girl to have siblings, and you know, we love family, we love children. So as long as we're blessed to have it, have them, we'll definitely keep going. But yeah, I'd say three or four, definitely.
Hey, and just for yourself, what area of London did you grow up in? By you said regionally, right? You wasn't in
Enfield. So I was in North London, Enfield.
Oh, okay, cool. So that's not too bad. That's like, but sorry, Enfield then. I'm aging you a little bit, but Enfield then I think was different to the Enfield of now, which is like, so basically there was this like movement to remove all the people from zones 2, 1, 2, and 3. It felt like, and they were taking all the, well, black people, black and brown people specifically, but they said that it was around ASBO orders. So people who were participating in crime, and they moved all of these families from those zones, and they were redeveloping lots of different blocks of flats. And then they were moving them out to Croydon and to Enfield. So if you go to those places, it's like a melting pot of everything London can be. So in the last 10 years, both of those places have dramatically shifted, and they're no longer the same, which is super interesting. But then what it did is just created a lot of people from some of the craziest areas, all being moved into a whole new area. And it created this whole new subplot of like what that area means. Mm-hmm. But then you've had like real instances that have happened, even though you were in Enfield, in technically what the countryside is, you've had to deal with inner city like impact of London. I'll tell you my brief encounters afterwards. But what was your encounters?
Do you know what it was like? So I grew up in an area like which was basically like Winchmore Hill, Palmer's Green, Southgate, which is, you know.
Are you a posh? I did my driving test around there. The nice yards there.
Listen, let me tell you something, man.
Man said, brother.
Whenever I tell the story, we were like my mom and dad, like I thank them so much for the hard work, but I can't say that it was posh. I can't say that. Like authentically, I can't say that it wasn't hard at times. Like my mum was building a business, my dad was traveling a lot with his work. And so it was like, there was a lot of times that now I look back, I can see the struggle, but at the time they shielded us from it. We didn't feel it. So, you know, there's levels to poshness, innit? And I think we were probably, in relation to maybe a lot of my school friends, we were probably doing really well. You could say, you know, go on holiday every so often, have two cars, have two parents, have, you know, not really have to worry about certain basic necessities. But yeah, I wouldn't say it was a life of abundance where I had no problems whatsoever. That being said, I went to school in Edmonton. So in North London, in North London, you've got the A10, right? And the A10 kind of divides Enfield. So on the left-hand side, you've got, if you're coming up from like central London, on the left-hand side, you've got your Southgate, Winchmore Hills, Enfield Town. On the right-hand side, you've got your Edmontons, your Ponders End, your Enfield Island Village, your Enfield Locks. And a lot of the time, you know, I would say that the right hand side, in fact, I think statistically is seen as one of the most deprived areas in the UK, not let alone London, right? High crime rates and stuff. And so, you know, when you're going to school in those environments, you're crossing paths with people that are dealing with a lot, right? And so I think as I was growing up, you know, the saying hurt people hurt people. And so I really struggled with other people that were going through lots of internal battles and I guess they were putting it out on other people. And so by the time, as you do as a child, you try and use different strategies to survive. And a lot of those strategies, as I always say, kind of threw myself under the bus because it was always other people's, like, you know, everyone else was laughing and I was the one that was getting in trouble. And so long and short of it, just my behavior was always just, just really challenging because I was just looking for attention from the people that were making my life difficult at the time. And so ended up getting expelled from school when I got to secondary school, doing robberies, hanging around with the mandem, as they say, trying to fit in. And because I always use the story of, like, you know, at the weekend, if everyone's watched Love Island, like now, if we put it into nowadays context, everyone's talking about Love Island. Oh, did you see what this happened? Da, da, da. But back in the day, it was raw. My man stabbed up this person, or this fight happened. And that's not my story. That's not, I went church and I, you know, this happened. So I'm coming to school on Monday and I'm just like, oh, what happened? I want to be involved. And it's a really challenging place to be when you're a young black boy. And even though I have my dad around me, I can't say that there was a prominence of other black role models, right? Where I'm looking up and being like, okay, but that person's got an edge. He's not just like a smart family guy or whatever. That person's got an edge. He's got a story. He's turned his life around, whatever, and he's doing well. Or whatever, you know. So I think that's where my struggle was, and I really just gravitated to what the mandem were on, and it just drew me down some dark paths, where, to be honest, you know what I'm saying? Yeah.
Listen, I think one day I had a conversation with Poet Pops, who used to be in the NBA, and he's from Tottenham. I think Poet is from Tottenham also. I'm from Hackney, and so we were just talking about like what it was growing up, and this is now probably 1995 to 2000, and we all just traumatized each other with just the mad memories of like I feel like I've been shot at on three occasions, like, and I would say me, yeah, but whoever I was standing next to, shot at and I've been forced to run on three occasions. I've had probably most of my friends die or go to jail at some point that I grew up with in between that time frame, and it's so bizarre how much trauma is laden inside the development of us as young black men from the inner city. It's so crazy. And when you say it to people as an adult, they're like, you did what? And you were where? And we're like, oh yeah, no, that just used to happen. Like, you know, there was a guy called Stabber. There was a guy called Stabber in my area. And if he just wanted whatever you had, he would stab you, then ask for it. There was no like, let me have the thing, let me have a chance of getting stabbed. You had nice trainers, you had an Avericks, you had a change face phone. I'm going to stab you, then I'm going to take the thing, and you have no choice. And you realize that these types of things are just wild. And like, for now, I look at my son who's now being raised somewhere in Hackney, and I'm like, I am so ready. I have an emergency FU fund ready to take my children anywhere that I need to take them away from this. They're not going to be the consequence. Because for years, I used to go to school, leave and encounter just madness. And by the way, it wasn't just other black men, by the way. We was in, I used to go to school in Islington. So I walked from Hackney to Islington. And we used to go past Packington, Barnsbury, Marquess Estate. These estates are all like white supremacist estates. And they did not like black and brown people at all. So you would have to go through those particular places. We got chased tons of times. Then there was the Turkish mafia. Then there was the triads. Like, to get to my school was a whole thing. Like, it was an assault course. And I feel there's a part of me that has been raised under such bizarre conditions that I have to give myself grace. Like, you know when I said, like, how do you deal with people or your boundaries? Yeah, it's because if you talk to me weird, I just, like, my body turns 16 to 18 again. Like, it just, I'm just looking like, what are you doing? Why are you walking weird, moving weird? Why are you talking to me crazy? And I feel like a lot of men have that kind of running in the background of, you know, and then at the same time in their modern day, we are fathers, we are professionals, we're highly talented, we're doing well. But there's just that remembering of your body, the trauma of just like dealing with all of those things. And it really does impact your presence. And there's no grace for it. There's no grace. Like, if you end up bringing your 18-year-old self to your 30-year-old meeting, like, you know, you may not have a job next week, or you may not have an income next week. So it's a real sensitivity. And that's why when I do my men's work, I always just want to talk to men like, oh, how are you, bro? Like, and I let them really get the things out, because they hold a lot from that time all the way up until now. Anyway, so you've turned all of those things and experiences into art, I see. You have a new film out, but this is not your first one either. Tell us about both of those projects.
So I made a short film in 2019 called Imani, which starred Javan Wade, who was in Shiro's Story and has gone on to do Doom Patrol and Bel-Air, etc. Basically he plays me in a film. So when I was 21, I got stabbed 7 times, just not minding my business. And as you said, growing up in the ends and being around people that just don't know how to handle conflict. And also I put myself in a situation, so it's not exclusively on them. And yeah, you know, we made a film that I had no idea was going to be the success that it was. It's now been viewed just under 4 million times on YouTube and has basically changed my life, man. Like, it's given me the ability to be myself completely. Like, I get to go around and I'm expected to be the authentic Armani in each room, which is why I've had to do so much work to make sure I'm not just being what everyone else wants me to be. And so, yeah, I go through life and I work with young people now every day. And to be honest, I've because of what I saw in that film as a social impact vehicle, you know, I was always conscious of wanting to do another project. But then Enfield Council contacted me probably just after I released the film, actually, about doing a local project, like a local schools project. And the legacy of that schools project was to create like another film or another piece of art that could create a legacy. And long and short of it, I pitched them the idea of doing another short film. I was only going to produce it because I produced the other short film. But then lockdown happened. And so I was just like, well, why don't I give a shot at writing and directing? Because when am I going to get another shot? And I don't know. I think I just invested time. I'm one of those people that if you give me enough time and I'm really invested, like I get a bit obsessive about studying stuff or learning things. So, you know, I watched Bear masterclasses and I read Bear books and just got deep into it and asked loads of questions from people I knew that were better at it than I was. And yeah, long and short of it, ended up writing and directing this film during lockdown and working with some really amazing people that just gave me a lot of encouragement and empowerment, you know, like my DOP, Banny Mendy, Bad Boy DOP, you know, my casting director, executive producer, Ola Christian from LaVille, Gabby Lafour, who was the producer for me. Like, there was loads of people on set that were just like they knew so much more about it than I did. And they gave me the space to do what I did best, which was, I guess, lead and have a vision. And so the bits that I wasn't good at, like, you know, when you say set, what does that mean? Or when you say, like, you know, when do I say cut? Or do I say action now? Like, all that stuff they covered for me and would speak in my ear and be like, say cut now, bro, say cut. Like, which was amazing. And so, yeah, we've gone on to make this film, and this film is coming out now on the 5th of July. And I'm super excited, like, just for the world to see it, because the last film I bought out, I guess it was almost, I almost stumbled into success. I had no idea of what the possibilities were with a film like that. Whereas this film, because I've seen the possibilities, I was very conscious about getting the right partnerships and making sure that the right people knew about it in advance. So I've been spending the last 4 or 5 months speaking to like the likes of your Bernardo's or your Prince's Trust or the NSPCC or, you know, the Home Office, the Violence Reduction Unit, etc. All of these people that do this work every day. And I don't want to go around and be that person that's communicating it the same way I do my film. So it's about them being aware of it, so when it comes out, they can use it as a tool. And there's just so much, the whole film's about exploitation and safeguarding and helping young people to be saved by the community, like, you know, the community stepping in where possible and being the guardians of the young people, because we're always talking about young people doing bad things, but, you know, we have almost created a world that, I guess, enables that a lot of the time. You know, I'm not saying it's exclusively down to us, but yeah, I'd say that's what the film is. And I'm grateful that, as I said, I get to tell these stories in a high quality way that will have a wide impact. So yeah, very, very blessed, man.
No, powerful, man. Where can people find you, or where can they find this film? Where would it actually be? Because I want to make sure as much people kind of engage this as possible.
So it's going to be on YouTube. If people search Save Me Short Film, it will come up. To find me, you've got my website, ArmaniSimpson.com. You've also got me on Instagram, Armani.Simpson. Those are my main places that I operate from. I know Twitter's a place that I'm very careful on Twitter. I don't even really use Twitter, to be honest. I know there's lots of tweeters. Yeah, man, because, you know, I'm just conscious of, like, I don't always want people to know what's in my head. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, and I know that there's some people that just, they use it as an outlet, whereas I'm blessed that I have outlets in real life. So I'll just go and talk to someone, and I'll just call my therapist and be like, yo, my guy, like, I'm going through this or whatever. So yeah, but yeah, definitely Instagram, my website. It's going to be on YouTube, and we're going to be pushing it, man. for sure.
Incredible. Look, man, I'm incredibly happy for you. I can't wait to be. I'll be at the premiere of this anyway, so I'm going to be there and I'll shout about it everywhere that we can go and see. But thank you so much for joining us and telling us all about it. And also, congratulations on your wonderful daughter, man. That's the part I'm most excited about. That's the real life stuff that, you know, doesn't go away. It's not a thing to present to the world in that way, but it's beautiful. So thank I hope you have a great
can
time
ask you,
with it.
Can I ask you a question before we finish?
Yeah, man. Cool.
Can I be added to the Dope Black Dads group now?
No, bruv. No more people, bruv. We quit. You can call me anytime you want. You can call me 24 hours a day. But that group, bruv, we're not adding no more people, bruv. It's absolutely, it's a whole next thing now. You got me, though.
Do you know what? It's like a rites of passage, because we've been talking about, like, you know, so, like, for years we've been talking, right?
And yeah.
You know, I was, it's one of those things. I was talking to my wife. I was like, oh, yeah, like, technically, I'm a dope black dad now, innit?
Do you know what? I'll do it. We'll do it. I feel like it's only right because I feel we've actually created it as an actual thing, and you definitely fit the description, and you won't be talking in there about football, so it'll be great.
No, unless it's about Arsenal. But anyway, that's the end of the conversation.
Declare soon come.
Yeah, soon come. Love, all right, bro. Come on,
thank
man.
You.
Dope Black Podcast.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.